can keep it in one part. But who knows?
The man who was assassinated by Chinese pirates?
It's that spirit of when they took Aboriginal people from the Philippines and made an Igorot village in the World's Fair. It's that spirit of like, look how weird.
I feel sometimes it's kind of like our first step in reclaiming and rediscovering what is ours.
If you got like some guy's tweets and made it into a book.
And then he said, you have to write the account of Lapu-Lapu's first encounter with Magellan.
Okay.
From the perspective of a fish.
Some dude gets a machete and tries to hack at you.
Oh my God.
And then you, of course, get like welts and stuff.
But I think now it's so great that we're like reclaiming what's ours and relearning who we are and kind of embracing a lot of things that we were forced to kind of set aside or throw away.
I like it. This is the Gods Must Be Crazy podcast.
This is a podcast on Philippine folklore and mythology. Mm. And it's hosted by me, Ice.
And me, Anima.
Hello. So in this episode, it's like a bonus episode. We just like got so excited. We've been talking about doing this kind of episode for a long time. But this is an episode on book recommendations.
Book recs. And it's really timely, I think, because One of the main motivations for us to start this podcast was we weren't seeing as much representation of Filipino stories in the zeitgeist. But the fun thing about it is, as we started talking about it more, and as we started talking to people more and more people would give us references and give us their own, how they got into the mythology. And
I think, to be fair, content on Philippine mythology and folklore really has existed.
Yes.
Obviously not as much as we want. I think the thing is just that it's kind of not as popular a genre in the past. And so we don't have as much exposure to the content that already exists, right? And I think, you know, it's great that there's like, I think a surge of interest and new stuff on Philippine mythology in the past couple of years. So more and more content is coming created up. And so it's
created,
so
exciting. Recreated.
And we also wanted to do this because whenever we kind of share a lot of the stories on that we find on Philippine mythology, every like week or so we will get like a comment or a request asking for book recommendations for people who are just getting into
more and more
you know, just getting interested in Philippine mythology and folklore. So today what we're gonna do is, it's not necessarily a full book rec, meaning we haven't read all of the stuff here. So what we've compiled instead is a mixture of stuff we've read but also things that are in our TBR or to be read list for 2022.
So many.
We always kind of get ahead of ourselves. This is going to be a very ambitious list. And what we've done is we've put it into three different categories. The first one, I think, which is relevant for a lot of people who listen to us, is if you are interested in learning about, say, some of the history.
Academics.
Yeah, a lot of like research or like background on Philippine mythology, folklore, and practices of our ancestors, you know, both in colonial and pre-colonial history. So we'll some of that. Obviously, part of it is actually collections of the stories themselves. And who are the earliest scholars, for example, who were able, Philippine scholars who were able to put it together and stuff like that. The second part is, if, for example, you have a bit more familiarity or you have a bit more of a casual interest in Philippine mythology, you want to learn more about fiction or like you want to read stories that are based on Philippine mythology.
Or you want to like, you want to enter it in a way that's familiar, right?
Exactly.
So it's kind of like when we were in school, one of the stories
every year we had to like really do a deep dive in a piece of Filipino literature.
Yeah.
And when I was in first year high school, it was Ibong Adarna.
Yeah.
And it
or Florantet Laura.
Or Florantet Laura was like second year. Yeah. But the first year, that when you're a freshman, it's Ibong Adarna. It's written by Francisco Balagtas, and it's a friggin' poem. It's an epic poem. Everything
it's
is
a song.
Like, it's a song. Yeah. Mm. And it's super deep Tagalog. Mm. I had no idea what was going on. Vocabulary wise was like, and I speak pretty good Tagalog, but I had no idea what was going on. So you know what my dad did?
Mm.
He bought me a comic.
Yeah.
He bought me a comic of it. And so that's how I understood and appreciate and Ibong Adarna. And now there's like children's Ibong Adarna books that I have for the baby.
Exactly. And I think, to be fair, a lot of really what's helped keep these types of stories alive is Philippine comics.
Yes.
So many comic writers.
Yes.
And we can't, you know, this episode already is so big, so we're not going to be featuring that in this
episode.
This
may be different parts.
So we'll do it in a future episode. Yeah. The third category, I forgot to say. So first category is references or like nonfiction, a bit more of the academic sources. The second category is fiction based on Philippine mythology and folklore. We're sure we're not going to be able to cover everything, so you know, you can give us recommendations. The third one is if you, like us, are interested in stories based on mythology that's not just your normal Eurocentric, you know, Greek gods, Norse gods, like Celtic mythology, like fairies and vampires and stuff. So what are like fantasy or sci-fi stories that are based on, say, Mayan mythology?
Yes.
Or like Aztec mythology?
Yes.
Because they're so, or Japanese mythology.
Yeah, Malayan mythology.
So that's what we're going to talk
mythology.
About today. We think we can keep it in one part, but who knows? Oh!
Hello.
Hi, Tegan.
Oh, whoops. Hi, Tegan.
Oopsie.
Oopsie.
Hey. That's my daughter, Tegan. She just woke up from
I
her
love
nap.
Your dress.
It's your Anna Elsa dress.
Oh.
Oh, are you getting a book? Oh.
Oh, okay.
We're That's doing good. A podcast. Do you want to join us?
Do you have book recommendations, Tegan?
What's your favorite book? Which book is your favorite?
Okay.
Okay, never mind.
I heard that's good.
Okay. Back to it.
All right. So let's see how many parts this ends up being.
Okay. This is going to be exciting.
So,
okay.
First section is for the aspiring casual mythology or folklore scholar.
Okay.
Right? We're covering references.
References.
And nonfiction.
Okay, great.
The first one is the big one.
Yes.
Let's talk about it. This is like literally a tome. Like,
it is. It's
huge.
Giant.
Adam and I ordered it, I think, a few months ago.
Mm-hmm.
And it is so huge. Do you have it?
I have it
let's,
here. I
let's
have
grab it.
It.
It's called the Boxer Codex.
Yeah.
And it's basically a manuscript from the late 16th century compiled by the Spanish. And it was produced in the Philippines. And it basically, it's like an account of what the early Spanish travelers observed of the cultures and peoples of China, the Philippines, Moluccas, Ladrones, and Siam. And those were the old names of some of the
people. It's Thailand.
Thailand. It's basically a manuscript written by the Spanish about the different customs and practices that they've observed. And, well, the history of the manuscript, right? Supposedly, it was commissioned or put together during the time of, this guy keeps following us, Dasmariñas, Governor General.
Governor General Dasmariñas, the man who was assassinated by Chinese pirates.
Beheaded by Chinese pirates.
Yes.
And then his Guardia Civil got transported. We had like a mini-sode on like...
Timey-wimey,
wibbly-wobbly. Timey-wimey. The guy who teleported, basically.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, so... It was compiled during that time, and then it was only rediscovered, when was it? In the
1947.
1940s. Yeah, by this guy called Charles Ralph Boxer, and he recognized like how important this was. He wrote a paper on it, and he called it actually the Manila Manuscript.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, that it became known as a Boxer Codex because of him, but at that time, he called it the Manila Manuscript, and he made it available to a lot of historians. Mm. Now, obviously, like, you know, historians always give like a huge caveat about this, which is that it is history or documented through the lens of the Spanish people who obviously did not have a lot of background on what, you know, what was the story and the reason behind a lot of the customs. They really, you know, are very random anecdotes sometimes.
Yes, of like and things that shock them.
Yeah, and I think there's still a lot of value in reading it because it gives you a glimpse of what it was like if you've never encountered like this practice and you saw it as they saw it.
I think also, I mean, I'm torn about it, right? So on one hand, I think it's someone else's point of view. And so obviously there is an aspect of voyeurism and there's an aspect of, it's that spirit of when they took Aboriginal people from the Philippines and made an Igorot village in the World's Fair. It's that spirit of like, look how weird. On the other hand, we today in our modern lives are closer to a westernized perspective of what society, air quotes, is. And so we're, from a reference point, we don't have necessarily all
and
our
I
references.
Think the point I'm making here is it's a first step to kind of the rediscovery, right? Mm-hmm. The sad thing is a lot of very old accounts, first-hand accounts from Filipinos themselves at that time don't exist because, number one, permanent records, etc. were destroyed when the Spanish came. And I feel sometimes it's kind of like our first step in like reclaiming and rediscovering what is ours. Because when you see it through their, admittedly voyeuristic lens, you can tie together what you know from the past and what you at least know or what we were able to preserve today to kind of build a complete story. So that's where I find value in it. The frustrating thing if you're trying to read it, so my only caveat is obviously, aside from just the inaccuracies, obviously, it's very random, guys.
It's so like, random and it's so boring. It's like someone's diary. It literally,
because
it's like some dude's diary.
Think about how they put it together, right? It's basically this guy randomly recording every single thing that they saw every day. Mm-hmm. It was literally just a diary. Like, okay, they would travel along with like a couple of scribes, right? And they would just put together what they observed, like chroniclers when people travel.
It's kind of like if you got like some guy's tweets and made it into a book. It's kind of like that.
Literally like a chapter about like marriage rituals and then another chapter about like farm animals. Like it's really
Or who
random.
Can wear shoes.
Yeah, so one of the random trivia that we randomly opened like one page and like in one of the pages it said that only like the datu
can wear shoes
in the village and no one else can wear shoes and there was no other background, no other explanation. Like, so shoes were invented but only one pair was made.
Yeah,
like,
there's
what's,
no context.
What's going on here?
So like here on the same page there is a description of the clothes of the Bisayan women.
Yeah.
The next paragraph is about their belief about creation.
I love it.
It's
random.
It's super random.
So that's like the just so you know what to expect. Now, the interesting thing is when you look at a lot of like references on illustration. So this is where there's a lot of value.
So
a
good.
Lot of like very early illustrations of ancient Filipinos are featured here. So that iconic drawing of a tattooed Filipino warrior. Which I'm sure if you casually browse through like Philippine pre-colonial history, you know what photo I'm talking about. It was part of the Boxer Codex.
Yeah.
They illustrated a lot of the local dresses of the different peoples that they visited. So you have Chinese, Siamese, and then you have a lot of the Filipino warrior class, noble class, etc.
You know what I really like about it if you look at it? They look at the illustration of the people. The facial hair is fairly consistent. Like how some Filipinos can't grow facial hair. And the hairlines of the women are also very consistent.
Yeah.
So
that's the Boxer Codex. I think let's stop there.
Yeah.
Otherwise, this episode
we can just
will
go on and on with
hours.
The Boxer Codex.
But yeah, that's one of the things that we've just started going through. It's kind of impossible to go through everything, but it's very interesting.
I have a related book that is also a reference. And it's also a reference. And unfortunately, it's also, well, fortunately, because it exists today, is a book of Philippine folk tales.
Mm-hmm.
And this one was gathered by Mabel Cook Cole.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
About her.
And the good thing about this book is that she was the, and I love this, of course, she was around during the American occupation of the Philippines. So early 1900s to to like 1945. And her husband was a scholar who was commissioned by the Philippine National Museum to do a gathering of art or whatever, a common academic residency, so mm-hmm. to speak. And so she actually traveled around the country when her husband was also traveling. And she sat with different tribes, Aboriginal tribes. So this was one of the definitive documentations of ethnic stories
mm-hmm.
from different tribes. And she spent 4 years with them, with different tribes from the Itnegan Abra, but they're called here Tinggian. A couple of tribes in Mindanao, both Moros and Christian groups.
Mm-hmm.
So it may not be necessarily pre-colonial, but it was one of the first oral histories. She gathered it straight from the tribes. So they're very interesting and they're good references also. But the thing I like about this book is that even before she dives into the different stories and the different epics,
mm-hmm.
is there's a background about the tribe. It's an agricultural tribe. It's a hunting tribe.
I love it.
It was largely influenced by the Arabs. So there's like an anthropological slant mm-hmm. before the actual story. So actually this is reference and fiction. And the good thing about it is free to read. It is in forgottenbooks.org.
It's because it's went by past its copyright date.
Yes.
It reminds me of this other book I have, which is called Filipino Popular Tales.
Mm-hmm.
It's also basically like an index of popular stories that they gathered from folktale, mm-hmm. like from the ethnic groups, by Dean Spruill Fansler.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a lot of the scholars today, so obviously if you're a Filipino literature scholar, you know, it's frustrating because a lot of your references are, like early references were gathered by these non-Filipino scholars.
Yes, yeah.
But it was a very scholarly look at it and it's always referenced in a lot of academic papers. They call it the FPT.
Okay.
So that's how it's well known amongst like the academic literature circle. Yeah. And it's interesting because it does, aside from just gathering the different folk tales, it indices them.
Nice.
So it made a very helpful index. That's why people
You're
like
searching
it.
People.
Because
searching
it
for
made a helpful index on, is it about animals? Is it about people?
Yeah.
Did this happen? Did that happen?
Yeah.
So, yeah.
There was no control find then.
Yeah. So, sorry. So, just to repeat, because this is a book rec.
Yes, book rec.
So, it's what...
My book, Philippine Folk Tales by Mabel Cook Cole. And you can buy the book, but you can also read it for free at forgottenbooks.org.
And Filipino Popular Tales by Dean S. Fansler. Okay, going back to history. Aside from the Boxer Codex, you can also read the book Barangay.
Yes.
And it's by William Henry Scott,
mm-hmm.
a Jesuit.
Mm-hmm.
Again, not Filipino. But I think the Boxer Codex was one of his references. So his intent was to kind of capture what 16th century Philippines looked like.
Mm-hmm.
And he split like his book into two sections. So part one was like about the culture and had different chapters on what are their physical appearance, what was food, farming, trade, commerce, religion, mm-hmm. etc. like. And then part two was basically like looking at the rest of the archipelago. So
mm-hmm.
part one was mainly Visayas.
Ah, okay.
And the reason this happens is the Boxer Codex, a lot of the things they feature there were mainly in the Visayas region.
Oh.
Because that's where they traveled.
Yes, true.
Right? So what William Henry Scott added was, in part two, he covered naman some of the other regions from north to south.
Mm-hmm.
Though not as comprehensively.
Yeah.
So in fact, I think we talked a lot about like death practices and beliefs in one of our earlier episodes, Mami Mia.
Yes.
I took a lot from his book, Barangay.
By the way, to recap also, Barangay is also the name of the smallest social group,
yes.
a government unit. And it's a word that we still use today. So like,
today it's interchangeable with village, basically.
Yes, yes. So for example, you can run for Barangay Captain, who is like the little king of his little village.
Exactly. And then the other one, it's not... So I know we talked about mythology and folktale. He's not directly linked to it, but I feel that it's a worthy reference. It's Rizal Without the Overcoat.
Okay.
By Ambet Ocampo.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like... So when it was first released, it was criticized by a lot of Rizal scholars because they were like, there's no like analysis and it doesn't deepen like the discussion and debate on Rizal, whatever. Because it's more like casual, down to earth, and human look at Rizal.
Yeah.
So Ambet Ocampo was my history teacher actually when I was in university. Mm-hmm. And he had a way of really making history interesting. Because at the end of the day, history is about like significant events in the past, yes. right? And, you know, who chooses what's significant?
Exactly.
Right?
Someone with a pen and Twitter.
And yes, big events and milestones are significant. But also little moments that kind of show you about what human beings were going through. So yes. his take on Rizal is very much about the hero Rizal, but as a human being.
I like that.
So there's a lot of like random anecdotes, rumors, academic intrigue, and like random little known facts.
The thing
because
about,
he bases it on like diaries, letters, and other things he discovered in the past.
Yeah. The thing about that attack is that Jose Rizal is the Philippine national hero.
Yes.
Jose Rizal is most often depicted as some kind of Jesus figure. And then many of the commonly known stories are stories about him being like the best guy. He studied optometry. This is oversimplification, right? He studied optometry because his mom was going blind for cataracts and he operated on his own mom. Or like the story of he was in a boat and one of his flip-flops went overboard. And then he decided to throw the other flip-flop over because he said whoever's going to get that one flip-flop should have
it's
the other
It's very like Jesus-like.
Right? It's very Jesus.
And it's funny because the way that we create heroes, right? It's basically like how our ancestors have been creating heroes in the past.
Yes,
you
like
take
the
a person who is impressive. They saw what Apo Ano, the mummified war hero, right? Of the Kankanai that we talked about in Mami Mia.
Yeah.
Who knows if he
was
really
the son of a god.
Of a dewata. But because you really want to like mythologize this person, you talk about like his divine origins and like maybe you hyperbolize a little bit.
And by the way, that's not just a Filipino thing. Because like, for example, Brian's favorite TV show, Vikings, is from the History Channel and it talks about Ragnar Lothbrok, who is a well-known epic hero in Norse mythology. But in the background, they say like, oh, he is descended from Odin and Thor.
Yeah. I mean, like, look, Alexander the Great brought his own chronicler whose main job was to talk about how amazing he was.
Yeah.
Very successfully, by the way.
Yes, yes, yes.
Hire that guy.
Hire him.
So Rizal without the overcoat, the reason I want to include it is we will have a episode involving him.
Yeah.
As a god.
Yes.
And basically, like, how people are really building up, like, the mythology and like, these fantastical stories about the miracles he made and how he is a god, basically. I won't spoil too much.
Yeah. But we did touch a little bit about that on how he is in Birihan City.
Exactly. And the notable thing about him is also during the time when I don't know if it was he was in exile in Dapitan at the time, but he just ventured into a lot of different things.
He
wrote like some folklore. So he wrote about Maria Makiling.
Yep.
Remember the story of Maria Makiling as a spurned lover?
Yes.
He wrote a version
of that. I think that's like semi-autobiographical because he had so many women.
And the turtle and the monkey, right?
Yes.
So he also like put that together. But when he was in one of the villages where he was practicing medicine, he noted an account of Amanggagaway and Kulam and how like the local practice.
A witch doctor.
Witch doctor who would put like a voodoo curse, for example, on someone. He talked about the local practices. And he actually wrote a very specific take on it, which is that at the end of the day, Kulam, or this curse, is an auto-suggestion, which means if you believe that you've been cursed, it will manifest in you.
100%. 100%.
But, so he actually did that very like critical analysis of it, which is, so the cure should not be physical, but rather psychological.
Yes.
And
I think that's very smart, because he was a doctor.
Yeah.
So he understood the effect of placebo and mind over matter.
So I think it's a good way to kind of get interested in some of the historical
figures.
I'm
going to borrow that book from you.
Yeah, that we know. Ambatucampo wrote a whole series of different accounts of different national heroes. So, for example, Rizal without the overcoat about Rizal, he wrote Aguinaldo's Breakfast about our first president, Emilio Aguinaldo. He wrote about Mabini's Ghost.
Ooh,
Bonifacio's
my great grandfather
and Luna's Mustache, among other books.
Oh, that's so good.
So okay. It's really, really fun, so you guys should check it out.
Okay, great. We're blowing up Ambit Ocampo's thing.
Oh wait, can I tell a random? Can I just tell the funniest story about Ambed as such a quirky teacher.
Okay.
Because he's like a bit unconventional. That's why I think people love going to his classes, because it's so interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And you really challenge the way that you look at history.
Mm-hmm.
So one of her quizzes at that time was like, it just came out of nowhere. So pop quiz.
Okay.
Right? And he said, okay, get a half sheet of paper.
Okay.
And then he said, you have to write the account of Lapu-Lapu's first encounter with Magellan.
Okay.
From the perspective of a fish.
I read about this exercise. I heard about this exercise.
From me, I think.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And so obviously people were like, we knew that he was a bit of, we call it philosophical, kind of like,
smart alecky.
Smart alecky.
Yeah.
So some people try to do it accurately. Like, oh, this happened and this happened. And then some people, I think I wrote something like, I can't see anything.
I'm a fish.
The water is so murky.
With blood.
They're like different. Like, why are there shoes? Like, things like that. I think that's what I wrote. So I tried to depict the story still, but I didn't.
Literally.
Yeah, literally. And then one person got an A. To be fair, did I get an A? Anyway, one person got an A. What he did was, he just said, glug, 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 glug.
I appreciate it. Yeah, no, I'm
that's
I'm
Jesuit
excited.
Education for
I know. I have a lot of Jesuit friends, so I know. I have one reference one. We talked a little bit about spells, voodoos, mm-hmm. things that are casts. And one book that I really loved, I haven't finished reading it, but I am enjoying it so far. It's called You Shall Be as Gods. Anting-Anting and the Filipino Quest for Mystical Power by Dennis Santos Villegas.
I love it.
It's amazing. It's this guy, Dennis Santos Villegas, he himself tried to join the cults and the groups that create or earn or have Anting-Anting. Anting-Anting is a talisman,
mm-hmm.
For lack of a better term. But he himself participated in complex rituals. And like, there's like a demonstrate. How do you demonstrate the effectiveness of an Anting-Anting? So some dude gets a machete and tries to hack at you.
Oh my God.
And then you, of course, get like welts and stuff. Uh-huh. Of course, it's on a blunted blade. So it's not a sharp blade.
Uh-huh.
But then they get a real blade and they demonstrate it with like a tomato or whatever. And they bring in this guy who has the Anting-Anting, the talisman. And the talismans are like either necklaces or tattoos or like even a t-shirt.
Mm-hmm.
And then they try to whack at this guy and nothing happens.
Oh my God.
So there's those stories of he himself witnessing it. But also he's approaching it from a very journalistic standpoint mm-hmm. too. So there's interviews, mm-hmm. there's fact checking, there's historical context. And I think it's like really, really cool. And he mixes pre-colonial but also the heavy Catholic influence. And he also even touches on the Rizal religion, Rizalistas. And so I'm really interested in diving into it. It's so dense and there's so many photos. So if you sort of
that's
like,
fun.
It's the photos are kind of great. So if you want to dive into the whole culture of anting-anting or talismans in Filipino culture, this is like one of the cool books. And it was, sorry, my baby is singing in the other room, but there is a book award for social science for this book. Also, if you want to buy your own anting-anting, there's also advice on where to get it and how to get your own anting-anting.
Because you have don't you have to like activate them or something?
Yes, you have to activate them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Don't worry guys, there's gonna be an episode on anting-anting once Anima finishes reading the book.
Jesus Christ. And have like interviews. I wish this is like, as an aside, I'll tell you an aside. My grandfather had an anting-anting and I think I mentioned it in our episode with Budget. And for me, I really regret not having like a tape recorder at that time because my granddad was like an amazing storyteller. He said before, like, so he got that anting-anting, that talisman that enabled him to win at gambling. He was not a good gambler, by the way. He did not win at gambling, but he said he won at gambling and he said he was never shot because he was a revolutionary soldier during the American
time. I think it's one of those things where you also, if you believe in it enough,
you like, know how to.
I'm harmless.
I'm invincible.
I'm invincible. That's but then harm me.
He said his friend took the talisman that allowed him to jump over like big gullies, like big valleys.
Oh my
and
God.
So, but then he was shot. So, and so like, oh, I'm gonna get this one instead. I'd rather not be shot than have like weird superpowers.
Maybe let's talk about a few honorable mentions and go through them quickly. I think we mentioned in one of our posts on Instagram, follow us at godsmustbecrazy.pod if you don't yet. But we post a lot of like our book recommendations as well there. But I posted like I was going through this magazine from Asian Geographic, and I was so excited because they basically mainly featured the Asian tattoo culture of different countries. It's so fascinating. And one of the recommendations we got from Jordan Clark of the Swan Project is Filipino Tattoos Ancient to Modern by Lane Wilkin, who is a traditional tattoo practitioner. So I hear that it's a very good resource for like, you know, the background of what the different tattoos mean and stuff like that. So I think if you're interested, there's, I think, a huge community is interested in traditional tattoos.
Yes.
I think that's a good reference. So speaking of the Swan Project, right?
Yeah.
Jordan Clark happened to edit the translation or lead the editing, I don't know, of the...
He edited it. They edited it.
Yeah. So of Ferdinand Blumentritt's Dictionary of Philippine Mythology. And I think it's a good kind of starting point if you're just interested in, like, all the different like kind of creatures or stories that you hear, the different characters that you kind of encounter. It's just a good like reference. Again, it's a dictionary, so obviously it doesn't go very deep into the lore or the background of the practice, but it gives you an easy reference for what is it. And there's a lot of illustrations as well, I think. So it's a really good starter, I
for
think.
Me.
So speaking of creatures, right? There is a book by a Filipino author Edgar C. Samar, who is also a former prof of mine.
Yeah,
he was a Filipino prof.
What were like the Jesuit professors doing?
So it's called Mga Nilalang Nakagilagilalas, which is like a fantastical creatures, basically.
Yes.
So it's like a compendium of like all of the different like monsters and creatures. It has a lot of illustrations as well. So it's a good reference on like the different like creatures and gods of myth. So he talks about different gods. He talks about like the pagod or different monsters. And you know, it's in Filipino. So there are obviously some people who would love to read in Tagalog.
Yeah.
So he, you know, he puts it together very well. We both have a copy of the book. You have
we
one
do.
Too.
I have one here.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's very cool. Yeah. I haven't gone through it very deeply.
Yeah.
It's, I speak Tagalog all the time. I have such a hard time reading it. It's just, it's just hard to sound out because I always sound it out in my head.
Yeah.
And so I stumble a lot through it. And
I find sometimes that it's easier for me to comprehend what I'm reading in Tagalog when I read it aloud.
Yon, maybe
as
I should try.
As opposed to just reading it in my head.
Yeah. I'll try that next time.
Yeah. And then we won't go through the rest in detail, but these are very essential books.
Yes.
Okay, and I saved them for that because I want you guys to remember that. And a lot of the stories that we feature in our episodes actually came from these sources.
Yes.
And these are these two authors I'm going to talk about. They're some of the very prominent early scholars of Philippine mythology.
And they get referenced a lot.
So these are literally the guys who traveled through the different areas of the Philippines. And, you know, they did this back in the day when there wasn't really a lot of interest on Philippine folk tale. Because in a lot of academic circles, they were like, you know, it's just like random superstitions, etc. That's not relevant to the history of our nation.
Yes.
But these were the guys who realized that this is as close as we're going to get to understanding the religion and the beliefs of our ancestors. And we need to protect it. So,
and like as Jose Rizal said, ang hindi mo marunong tumingin sa pinanggalingan ay hindi makakarating sa patutunguhan.
Translate that.
He who does not know how to look where he came from will not get to
his destination. So one of them is called The Outline of Philippine Mythology by F. Landa Hocano.
F. Landa Hocano, who was a professor in my university.
Yeah, and the other one is a series of books by Maximo Ramos.
Everyone
who starts getting into Philippine mythology starts getting the Maximo Ramos books.
Yes.
Different colors of it.
Yes.
He is from CEU. Sorry, so... Eflando Hakan is from the UP.
I think so, yeah.
And Maximo Ramos is from
Centro Escolar University.
And they both know each other, of course. Yeah. In fact, Eflando Hakan wrote the foreword in
Maximo Ramos's
books.
I don't have those books. I should
order them. Outline of Philippine mythology is great because it gathers together different mythology stories and folktales.
Mm-hmm.
We reference it a lot on creation myths.
Mm-hmm.
We are doing a very exciting series on the Philippine epics. And so he also gathered together a summary of the Philippine epics. In fact, he was the one who was able to get for us a complete account of the full Humadapnon, which is the longest epic that we have recorded. And he struggled to get it complete because not everyone knew the full story. Yeah,
other people
story.
Knew
so
other
he had
portions.
To trace, okay, yeah. Who's the singer who knows it? Okay, let's go to this village, let's go to this person.
Yeah.
He had to beg. They didn't want to give it to him.
Of course.
He had to beg the girl to record it, and she recorded it over, like, I don't know, weeks or something. So, you know, really, really, really good reference. And I think it just means so much more as well that it is, you know,
written by Filipino.
Filipino scholars who were able to put it together, because they were able to kind of, you know, do it in a way that we can also comprehend and appreciate more.
Mm-hmm.
Maximo Ramos wrote several books, and we will post a complete list in the show notes so you can have a look through it.
But I don't know if we can fit all the books in. We should probably have like a blog post separate just for those books.
I think so. Yeah. Right? But he wrote stuff like Creatures of Midnight, which is all of the different
monsters
like,
and aswans.
Monsters and beings. And I like how he also tried to put a categorization.
Ah, really?
These are all of the dragons. These are all of the mermaids.
Wow.
These are all of the vampiric ones and stuff like that. And it's I think it's a good starting point because remember at this time we barely collected these stories, right?
Yeah.
And no one was trying to put together a complete picture of how it all stacked together.
Yep. Yep.
So I love that he started putting that effort together and tried to make it like into clear categories. He wrote Creatures of Midnight, Legends of the Lower Gods, Tales of Long Ago, The Aswan Complex, which is gathering random like first-hand account stories of people's experiences with the Aswan. There's a lot more that he wrote. So again, I think we'll just do one post, which is just all of his books. So you guys have it as references. So yeah, so maybe we'll stop there. Obviously, there are going to be a lot that we miss.
Mm-hmm.
If you feel like there are some really, really good kind of references or sources, please, we would love to know because obviously we use this as material for our episodes. And, you know, it would be great to get more resources and learn more on mythology and history. Yeah. Of course, how could we not mention this? I got it because I was just so... I literally judged the book by its cover.
Yeah.
I loved the title so much that I decided to get it. But it turned out to be so good and so helpful. I'm talking about two books by the Halo Halos Histories series. And
Halo Halo meaning mix, but also is a dessert that we have in the Philippines.
Yes. And it's books on Philippine history that are written more for younger readers.
Mm-hmm.
But obviously, you know...
Like YA or like my child?
No, like teens.
Okay.
Yeah, younger readers. You can also read it with your child, I think, and talk about it. But so it's for the casual young reader, reader or person who's interested in Philippine history. So two books that I have so far. The first one is about like pre-colonial history.
Mm-hmm.
The second one is about money. So the first one is called A Law Long Time Ago.
Yeah.
And the second one is called Kasaysayan. So... I'm sorry to have to explain the pun. In don't speak Tagalog.
Yes.
A law long time ago. So, lolo is the Philippine Tagalog word for...
Grandfather.
And for kasaysayan means history. So...
Cash.
It just feels so wrong when I have
cash,
to
saysayan.
Explain the joke.
It's so cute though.
But it's
no,
so...
we love puns. We love puns.
Not sure if you know this.
I love puns.
We love puns. So that's it first for the first section. We're going to stop it here for now.
We're going to pause for now and save it for our next episode.
We're at 40 minutes.
We are at 40 minutes. And we don't want this to be a boring episode.
3-hour episode.
Jesus Christ.
But yes. So yes, if you are interested into pouring your way into Philippine history and mythology, or if you've heard about tales of folklore and mythology and kind of want to understand What context was it in? Yeah. How did it play out in their lives? Mm-hmm. I think it really enriches the experience 100%. Beyond the stories themselves. It's really worth it to kind of go back and rediscover mm-hmm. a lot of these things. And for a lot of us, you know, we're going through, you know, what people are saying, decolonization.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. And it's really, you grew up in a very colonial framework.
Yeah.
An understanding of your culture through the lens of other people.
Yeah.
But I think now it's so great that we're like reclaiming
mm-hmm.
what's ours and relearning who we are mm-hmm. and kind of embracing a lot of things that we were forced to kind of set aside or throw away.
I like it, but one of the best things that I saw recently on TikTok, which is like, thank you, TikTok, is this guy was talking about a page that he, one of the reference books, which I don't have on hand, but one of the reference books that he had. And it was talking about how ancient Filipinos, when the Spanish came,
mm-hmm.
when you think about ancient Filipinos, as they are depicted in paintings and stuff, is that they're wearing bahag or loincloth, and they have bows and arrows, and they have like machetes and stuff. But apparently, in this historical depiction account, the Filipinos had armor, they had greaves, mm-hmm. they had guns, they had cannons.
When was this?
In the Spanish times, and they were forging iron. So I'm gonna find that TikTok and send it to you. But it's like really cool because it's remember when we were doing our episode on Bringan, and I was talking about like, oh, you know, Filipinos weren't very sophisticated fighters. They were. They had hand cannons.
I mean, if they've been warring tribes for like centuries,
of course, and
there's so much trade because of our location.
They were making gunpowder. In Manila.
I mean, didn't the Chinese invent gunpowder?
They did.
Probably came from Chinese trade.
Yeah.
So but yes, so just to wrap up, we hope you find it helpful in your, you know, journey towards understanding a bit more about this topic. Again, if you have any suggestions for us, we would love to, you know, learn about it and learn more. Obviously, we haven't covered a lot of the sources that are available.
Yeah.
We would love to learn for you guys, as we always do.
Yay!
See ya!
See ya!